Okay, here we go. Hour number three on this Wednesday night. I'm going to say hello to our friend of so many years, Jordan Maxwell. Jordan's bedtime stories on tap for you this hour. Hello, Mr. Maxwell. How are you?
Well, hello there, Jeff. I guess we're back on again. Now, I sent you a picture maybe about, I don't know, about 15 minutes ago of something that I saw in my
Yeah, do
backyard.
You want me to put that picture up?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, if you can. That would be nice because I'd like for people to see it. Because I've talked about this on other shows, and I want to talk about it again tonight.
Okay.
I want to try and put all of my experiences together that I can into this series. And so I will be repeating something I've said before elsewhere. And maybe I've even told you, but when I was about 7 or 8 years old, back in Florida, my dog one morning about 5 o'clock in the morning, my dog went totally crazy, was ranting and raving and waking the whole neighborhood up. And so I had to get up and go see what the dog, what was wrong with the dog. And I went outside on the back porch and between the wooden fence and the garage wall, the wall of the garage, my dog had cornered what I thought and what I have said in the past was a Tyrannosaurus Rex, a small one, looked like a baby T-Rex. But upon further examination, I found exactly what it was that I saw. And if you're seeing it yourself, you will.
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture now. It's a Gallimimus.
Yes, exactly. And so that's what I saw. But as a kid, and it's been a long time since I saw it, so I just assumed it was a baby T-Rex. Well, it looks a lot like one, but...
Oh, sure. Of course, as a kid, yeah. You'd think that. Let me ask you a question. This is it light out? Are you able to see? You're able to see well.
Oh, no. It was an early morning. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning.
All right.
And people mostly was still asleep. And my dog went crazy, and so my dad told me, go out and keep that, shut
the dog
up.
Yeah.
And so I went outside, and I saw this little dinosaur creature.
How tall was it at the head, about, in the shoulder?
I was on the porch. I'm looking down at it. I would say it's probably about 2.5 to 3 foot high, 2.5 to 3 foot. And it was snapping at the dog because it was kind of like a standoff. The dog had it, it cornered so it couldn't get away. But it wasn't, the dog's not getting that close to it. And this thing is not getting that close to the dog. And so they just kept snapping at each other and the dog's barking. And so I ran back in and told my dad that, we've got a dinosaur in our backyard. And so he gets up and goes out and says, well, I'll be damned, there is a dinosaur in the backyard.
And he saw it. Okay, he got to see it, so there's validation
for
you.
Yeah, so he got to see it, too. And so by that time, of course, our neighbors who live very close to us were all awake. And so my dad called a neighbor 2 houses down who were very close friends with us, and he was a gun enthusiast. And so my dad told him, come over here quick and bring a gun. And so he came over, and by that time there were other neighbors that were coming down our driveway, coming into the backyard to see what was going on. And so there's quite a few people in the backyard.
And were they seeing it? It was still there?
Oh yeah. Everybody was standing there watching it, and the dog was keeping it, keeping it from going anywhere because there was a big wall of our garage, and then there was a heavy wooden fence, and so the thing was blocked in, and the dog would not let it out. And so lots of our neighbors come by, and they were standing looking at it, and then finally our next-door neighbor came over with a gun. And he said, it's too bad we couldn't just capture this thing. My God, can you imagine what you can make capturing this thing? And my dad decided, no, I don't want this thing captured. I just want it dead because it might really injure or hurt somebody, or children in the neighborhood, and there's no way you're going to capture this thing. So our neighbor did shoot it, and the dog got quiet. And there was newspaper. I remember just as a little kid, but I remember there was newspaper people came, and the police came into our backyard, and they saw the animal, and then all the men were standing around talking about it. I went back inside, and so all I know is that I saw a dinosaur of sorts in my backyard, and I've said that before. Well,
Jordan, I what city were you living in at this time?
Pensacola.
Okay.
Yeah. Our house was we were about 6 blocks from the bay, which opens out into the Gulf of Mexico. And there were huge ships coming in from Brazil, from South America, from South and Central America would come into our ports at Pensacola. We had a huge seaport there, and so a lot of banana boats and those kind of cargo ships would come in. Obviously, this thing must have gotten involved, in the. Picking up all these fruits and stuff, and this thing got involved in it, and then when it parked, it got off and ended up in my backyard.
Are carnivores, I would think.
I don't know, but
was it hissing?
It was kind of biting and hissing. It wasn't a low like you hear the dinosaurs, but it was kind of like a high hissing,
right?
A growling, I would say, a high pitched growling, and it kept trying to bite the dog, to scare the dog off.
What color was it?
I don't even remember. It's just I would think probably the color that the picture is is just about the same. But
that's pretty amazing. Now
what I think is amazing is the damn thing would show up in my backyard.
It's all your fault, Jordan. It always is.
Yep.
I'm wondering if these aren't endemic to Florida with all the swampland and backland and.
Well, that's true too. Yeah, you're right. You're right. There's a lot of swamp area in Northwest Florida where I'm from. Lots of it. I mean, and some of that stuff goes way back into what I've seen.
Right.
Looks like not just swamp, but jungles.
Well, they have the Florida version of Bigfoot there. It smells bad. It's got a very bad odor about it.
Yep. And so I've seen, but so I'm just one of the few people that's seen that actual dinosaur of sorts in my backyard.
Well, they're still around. It makes sense that some survived, and there have been, as you know, numerous reports of pteranodons and pterodactyls flying that people have seen. No mistaking those. And in fact, if you do a search for pteranodon, starts with a P. Pteradon, and hit images, you'll see photographs of these things here today flying around, and they survived.
No doubt about it. Yeah, and as there's some actual tourists were in Mexico filming some old temple, and this Gallimas creature comes running out, and they got it on tape.
The same thing, a Gallimimus?
Yeah, and the thing comes running past them, and they got the thing on. They got the thing on tape.
For those of you who don't have a computer right now, we'll put the picture up, and it looks like the animals in that movie about the island where they had Dinosaur Park. I forget the name of the film now. The two-legged kind that were inside. There were two of them, I think, and they were. But those were bigger. This was a smaller version. But
this
one
was a small version.
Has
yeah.
two large, very muscular back legs and two very thin and almost useless-looking front legs. And then it has a long neck and a long tail for balance.
Yep. And so I'm just
what
saying,
happened to it, Jordan? You know, you could have put this thing on ice and made a lot of money with it. Dad wasn't a merchandiser or a marketer, I guess.
No, obviously not. He was pretty perturbed at just having this thing in the backyard. But again, the only thing of any real interest to me is the fact that why did it come into my backyard?
I mean, somebody sent it there. Go find Maxwell and bother him.
Yeah, and scare the pee wads out of the whole family. So
that's
anyway.
Right.
But I don't know if I said anything about this. I tend
years
to think
ago
I probably,
we talked about it long ago. But
yeah,
not but, in great detail.
But there's something else I was going to talk about in relation to that. But my gut feeling, as I've already talked about it with you, and that was a time that back in 89, about 1989, 90, in Los Angeles, it had had a rainstorm for 2 or 3 days. And so I knew that the air would be clear. And so I went up to Griffith Park Observatory real early in the morning. I got there about 6:30, and they opens at 6:30 or something like that. And I drove up to the observatory, and there was nobody there. I was the first person there. And nobody showed up for another hour or two. But I was up at Griffith Park one morning after it had rained, crystal clear skies, and roaming around the observatory by myself. And I went out to an observation deck overlooking all of Los Angeles. And out in the east, way out in the east, I would say maybe 40 to 50 miles out, there was extremely heavy white clouds all around. And especially over LA, but way out in the east, I could see. And for some reason, standing on that observation deck, I don't know why, but my eye caught a little tiny black speck in that cloud in the east. And immediately I thought to myself, anything that I can see, even as a dot from 50 miles away, has got to be big. And so I just trained my eye on it and watched it. And I noticed it was starting to get bigger, so it was coming my way. And now I was totally intrigued. And I'm up there at Griffith Park by myself and with no camera. And I'm just watching this black dot moving and getting closer and closer. And as I said, the clouds overhead were very heavy white clouds. And as this thing came over, it was moving like, I would say, 10 times faster than 747s, because I go out to the airport and watch the big planes come
sure.
in. But
sure.
but from way out, watching the planes come in, it takes a long time because they're not moving that fast, even though they are moving fast, but not that fast. So, but this thing was really moving. This thing was moving way quick. And it shot over the top of my head, going out toward the Pacific, going out to Santa Monica and over the Pacific. And as it flew over my head, as I said, there were heavy white clouds, so there was no doubt about what I was seeing. It was a pterodactyl, and it was very big. It was huge.
Okay, that's what I was just talking about. So you did see one.
And it was, and I saw this thing. And as it came over, one thing, it was not flapping its wings. It was moving so fast, it was just gliding. And so it probably caught some current in the air or
sure.
whatever.
Thermals.
It wasn't flapping its wings. It was just sailing fast. I mean, I would say 4 or 5 times faster than if you're watching.
How interesting. You wouldn't think that they would go that fast.
No, this thing was moving. I mean, I've been up to the observatory so many times, and I've watched a big 747, 757s come in.
Right.
And, you know, it takes a few minutes to just sit and watch them as they're coming in. But this thing, from like 40 to 50 miles away, it was there in no time. And as it went over my head, it was enormous, and it shot straight out towards Santa Monica to the ocean.
How big do you think it was, Jordan? You say enormous. How big?
I've been up there so many times and seen 747s.
Yeah.
This thing was at least that big.
That's a huge wingspan. Huge.
Oh, God, it was huge. It was enormous. And so as it passed over, it was going quickly. It looked just like a pterodactyl. You know, it had all the features. And so, but what was really startling is I watched it go out toward the Pacific, towards Santa Monica. There was a heavy, heavy cloud cover over the Pacific, and just that one section, coming into, Santa Monica. Not over the whole ocean, but just a very heavy cloud cover coming in toward Santa Monica. And as this thing passed over me, I knew it's heading for Santa Monica, it's heading for the ocean. Out of that cloud cover over Santa Monica came five more pterodactyls. And as they came out, they were following each one. They had a leader, and he came out. Next one followed out, and that one came out, and ultimately there were five following each other. And they formed a circle around Santa Monica, over the city of Santa Monica. They formed a circle and sailing around. Well, when this one that was right over my head, it went right toward that circle and fit right into the circle, and now there's six of them circling Santa Monica. And then one of them broke loose from the circle and started back into the cloud mass, and each one behind him followed the same way until the last one, the sixth one, went back into the cloud mass, and they were gone. And so talk about something truly off the wall and lunacy. But that's what I saw. I'm not validating anything. I'm just telling you what my eyes saw. I saw six pterodactyls.
Wow.
One
wow.
right over my head.
Wow.
And five more right circling over Santa Monica. So I don't
know.
Well,
they probably were friends of that gallimimus that your neighbor shot.
Yeah, and probably so. I don't know.
That's really weird, Jordan. Two things come to mind. One, obviously, if the first one that went over your head was hungry, it could have picked you up, no problem.
Well, probably.
Number two, we've been many times into this situation where we think that our visitors have the ability to make us see what they want us to see.
Precisely. That's exactly right. And that's why I've questioned my own integrity on this.
Maybe these were discs and they weren't pterodactyls.
That's very possible. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not validating anything
gotcha.
I tell you.
I got it.
What my eyes saw. Say it again.
Wow. That's fascinating. That's a wonderful story.
I'm just telling you what I saw.
Yeah.
So, another thing happened to me when I was about 26 years old. I had a new Ford Mustang. And that thing was a real powerful car. And so one day I was out in the San Fernando Valley, and I was going east to west, and I was on a main street, and I came up to another main street crossing it. And did I tell you this before?
I don't know.
Okay, well, so I pull up at the light.
Not enough information yet. Go ahead.
Okay. So I pull up at the red light, but I'm in the slow lane. And on my left is another car, and that's in the middle lane. Mm-hmm. And then there was a truck in the turn lane, and we're all waiting for the red light to change.
Uh-huh.
And so when the light changed, I hit the gas. I mean, I took off. I hit the gas. And when I did, I hit the steering wheel because my car locked up. The transmission just plain locked. And when it locked, I hit the steering wheel and knocked the breath out of me. And the moment I hit the steering wheel, a car shot through in front of me and had run the red light.
Uh-huh.
And was going at least 60 miles an hour, minimum.
Yeah.
This thing passed me so quick. It was just a flash in a blink of an eye. And if my car had gone another 10 to 12 feet, that car would have hit me on the driver's side doing 60 miles an hour. And, of course, I wouldn't be here talking to you. But all of a sudden, my transmission locked. And the moment it locked, the car shot past me and my transmission unlocked. So it was only locked for a fraction of a second. But that fraction of a second made the difference between that car missing me by a few feet and
Yeah. Okay. You weren't wearing seatbelts, I don't think.
No, not at all. This was back in 1960.
That's why you were thrown into the steering wheel. I got it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Wow. Okay, I remember that story from before, but that was even more vivid. Not even time to register the make or model of the car.
It went by so fast. All I know is it's a big car.
Yeah,
and it was really traveling.
Wow. Well, somebody's watching over you, no doubt about it.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, we will be right back with Jordan. If you go to guests and look under Jordan's name, you'll see the little dinosaur. What Jordan saw as a boy, it says. Click on that and you'll see it. It might be a different species. I don't know how big Gallimimus was, but that's how it looked. Right? It's a common configuration for dinosaurs. All right, very good. Now, the first guest tonight we had on has a new book coming out about synchronicities. Very interesting. Now, we've talked about synchronicities before,
mm-hmm.
and that's a big subject. But what other stories have you tonight?
Well, quite a few. Let's see. Back in the mid-90s, 2000, and I don't remember exactly what. I can't even exactly remember when this happened. It has to have been like 2006, 2007, maybe. I was staying with a friend of mine, and he was giving me a room to live in, and I was storing all of my possessions, my boxes of books and videos and masters and everything I own in the world.
Yeah.
And so I was storing them in his storage room. And then he sold the house, and so he had to move. Well, that means I got to move. And I had no money and no place to go. I had zero, nothing. And out of nowhere, I get a phone call from a friend who's been following my work for many years. And he had come to see me two or three times from Panama, from the country of Panama. And he would come up to L.A. to see me, and so he called and said, he asked me, so what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm looking to go live under a bridge right now because I have to move at the end of the month, and I have no place to go and no money if I did get there. And so he said, well, then come live with me. I have an extra bedroom. You come live with me in Panama. Well, it's either that or sleep under a bridge. So I said, okay. And he said, I'll take care of the expense of bringing everything down and getting you down here. And so he did. He paid for everything to be shipped. Well, we took all of, I don't know, I had about 35 or 40 bank boxes of my video masters, audio masters, all of my research books, and just everything. Everything I have in the world, I had in boxes sealed up, And so we took it down to the shipping company in downtown L.A., and I flew down to Panama to live. And
yeah, I remember that. It was a high-rise.
Yeah, it was a high-rise, and my friend was very, very decent, very nice, and he was very generous with me. And so it took about 6 weeks for all my stuff to get down to Panama because it was coming on a ship. And so I finally got to Panama, and they called us one day, and they said that all of your stuff has arrived. It's on the shipping dock, ready to be taken tomorrow morning. We'll be delivering everything tomorrow morning. Great. And so the next morning, about 8 o'clock, we get a phone call from the shipping company, and they said, where all of your stuff was sitting on the loading dock ready to be delivered, it caught fire this morning, and it's totally gone, everything. It just melted into the concrete, and it's gone. So that's it, and too bad, and goodbye, and good luck. And so I lost everything, totally. Everything I owned in the world was gone, including my clothes, all of my...
Did you go down to the scene of the fire?
Say it again?
Did you go down to the scene of the fire?
Oh, yeah. And it
was anything around... Well, Jordan, was anything around it burned?
It was a lot of stuff was burned all around it, but
okay.
but they said that the center, we were talking to the firemen, the police, and they said that the fire started right where my stuff was. And So somehow or another, the fire started. Now, as far as I'm concerned,
that's no coincidence. No coincidence. No. Somebody torched it. This is sick.
It didn't start at all the other warehouses, which are tons of them down there in Panama. No, it happened in the one my stuff was in, and it happened in that one particular spot where my stuff was. I lost everything I own in the world, period. So eventually I ended up coming back to America and just giving up, and that's why I dropped out of the scene for a while. Because I had nothing, owned nothing, and got nothing, and I had to stay with friends who give me a room to live in until I could get back on my feet. And so, that has happened to me quite a few times, losing everything. And I what it does when it happens, I just keep going because I figure I'm supposed to do something. I'll just keep on going, and hopefully maybe one day something will happen that I can do my work without being, losing everything, So
that's I can't even imagine that feeling. That's a horrible feeling.
Oh, because there was so many documents.
Yeah.
And videos and DVDs and research documents and one of a kind books and documents from governments about me, documents from important people around the world who had written me, highly placed individuals who had written me personal letters. Everything was gone forever. So, but like I said, I've lived through it all. I'm still here trying to stay alive and do what I do. And we got a couple of minutes I want to tell you about.
Oh, we got 14 minutes.
Yeah, good. I was back in 1985. In North Hollywood, I'm driving down the street, and I pull up behind a car which is waiting for the red light. And the light turns green, and the guy was preoccupied either listening to the radio or whatever he was doing, and so he didn't move. So I just backed the car up quietly. I'm not going to blow the horn. I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pulled around him, but then I put my foot to the floor, and I took off. And it scared him. It scared him. He wasn't, he was probably half asleep, and it scared him when I took off like that. And it angered him. And so I saw, and I looked in my rearview mirror, and I saw him with his fist out the window, shaking his fist at me. And so I knew that I have not made a friend here. And he took off. He took off after me, and I saw a lot of brown smoke coming out from behind his car. So I knew he was putting his foot to the floor.
Right.
And so he was gaining on me, and I was speeding. I didn't want to speed, but I was speeding to get away from him. And gee. I came to an overpass, and to a freeway overpass, and there were two red lights, one on this side, one on the other. I ran those red lights. I saw that it would be safe, so I did. I ran the two red lights, thinking that he would stop, and that would give me a few moments to get away. But he ran the red lights also.
Now, who was this guy again? Who was this guy?
I have no idea.
You never, never an identifier. Okay.
No, no. And so then I came to the corner of this of another main street, and I ran the red light and turned right. I couldn't go through it, too much traffic. But I saw that I could turn right and run the light, and so I did. And so I as I turned, I put my foot to the floor, and now I was heading toward the main street in town, which will be a big cross street. About two blocks further would be a main cross street.
Wait, what city are we in now?
We're in North Hollywood.
Okay.
And Toluca Lake area.
Right.
And as I was heading toward the main street, two blocks away, I could see his car wide open. I could see the brown smoke.
This is nuts.
This guy is crazy. He's not giving up.
The original road rage.
I don't know what he's going to do or what he thinks he's going to do, but it's a very very difficult and dangerous situation because this guy is crazy. And so as I drove by, I was going very fast, but I realized that the cross street that was coming up in a half a block was so busy, a main cross street, mm-hmm, I could mm-hmm. not run that light mm-hmm. at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what I was going to do because I'm not even going to be able to make a right turn quick because it's just too much traffic. And so I didn't know what I was going to do. All I knew is this guy was coming up on me fast. And as I passed, there was a Greyhound bus station on my right, a small one, one of the little small Greyhound
yeah.
bus stations.
A local.
A local one. And there was a school bus. They parked a lot of big buses there on the side street.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a school bus right there on that little side street. And as I came up onto the bus station, this big yellow school bus, all of a sudden backed out wide open. He put his foot to the floor and backed out. Instantaneously, he backed out. And when he did, he almost hit me. I was even with him as I saw him coming out wide open, and I just missed him by a foot or two. And when he pulled out wide open and stopped, the car that was chasing me hit the side of that bus wide open. And when he hit the bus almost turned over and skidded around, and the car ricocheted off the bus and shot across the street and hit a telephone post. And this guy was really traveling. So when he hit that bus, he ricocheted like a bullet and shot straight across and hit a telephone pole. I was so nervous, but I finally stopped the car before that bad intersection. And I was shaking. I didn't realize what had happened. All I know is I was safe, and he's no longer following me. So then I drove around the block, and I came back the same place, but I parked the car about a half a block before the accident and walked up to the accident. So by that time, there were people all over, cars and people standing around. And the poor guy, the driver of the bus, kept saying to everybody, he was telling everybody as I was coming up, I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I did that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. And I thought to myself, incredible. He's saying, I don't know why I did that. And so I walked over to the car, which was now wrapped around the telephone post. I walked up to it. The guy had the driving post, the steering post, in his chest, all the way into his chest. It was bleeding from all around the puncture, but also his mouth and nose was bleeding, some of it out of his eyes, but he was bleeding profusely. And laying there against the dash, with the thing buried in his chest, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I just shook my head like, you know, this was not a very smart idea for you, and he just looked at me, and then I walked off and went back to my car and left. But that was an incredible situation, where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a bus backs out and just saves me in the nick of time.
There's some major energies at work there.
Incredible. Totally incredible stuff. And
wow. When he looked at you, was there any emotion in his eyes of any kind?
No. He was just looking. He was in his last and final moments. There's no doubt in my mind that's what it was. He was in his last moments of life, and he knew he was dying, and he knew he was going to die. And so he was just looking at me, and I stared right back at him. I looked him in the eye, and he looked at me. And I shook my head as if to say, you know, that wasn't very smart of you.
Right.
And I stood there for a moment looking at him, and he just looked at me, and then I walked off. And that's it. So.
Wow. amazing vignette.
I don't know how, and that poor guy, I walked past and he's still out in the street talking to people. He said, I don't know why I did that. Well,
right,
I know why he did it.
Right, of course.
Somebody made him.
Of course.
So that just tells me that there's a higher power that can intervene in your life in a blink of an eye, if it chooses to.
That's the big qualifier, if it chooses to. Or was it directed to do so? And by whom or what? There's several levels to this. That's a really vivid story. That's amazing.
Yeah.
People have been after you many times.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
And we know, I'm not going to go into it now, but it hadn't stopped.
Many times I have been saved from death in a split second, in a fraction of a second. Something happened, and I came out of it alive. And I've had way too many experiences like that, so it tells me somebody wants me alive.
Right.
Somebody wants me here.
You still got work to do.
Yep. I've said so many times, I'll say it again. I don't know, really. I don't understand how the universe works. I don't know what God is. I don't know what synchronicity is. All I know is what I do. And what I do, I am given to do. It's not that I have sat down and figured out what I want to do. It's just who I am, and that's what I do. So I just go along with it. Whatever my destiny is, I just do it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you just do what you do, and I do what I do. So, but I have had many times when somebody stepped into my life to save me. And what else? The car, and now that we only have a few more minutes, I'd like to say, too, also, talking about the pterodactyls, when I was in Zurich, Switzerland, I was invited to come to Zurich, Switzerland by an extremely powerful person.
Right? Yeah.
And I'm not going to talk about it, but I lived there for about, I think it was a month and a half, so 6 weeks, no, 7 weeks. I lived in Zurich in a very, very incredible 5-star hotel in Zurich up in the mountains. And every morning I would go out on the balcony, and there's a phone out there, and I would call for breakfast, and they immediately it was a 5-star hotel. They immediately would come up and have everything there, and they would fry your eggs and cook right there for you when you're sitting there, and pour your
They had a little portable entree preparation cart that they'd roll in and cook it right there.
And it was had fire and it had gas, and they would turn on the gas.
Unreal.
And fixing your oatmeal and eggs and toast, and they have the coal, and they have
everything
coal.
But a back rub, huh?
Yeah, and so I would sit out on the deck of my balcony overlooking the Swiss Alps. Incredibly, and I've got some pictures I'm going to send you because I took pictures from the porch, and I'm up about 5 floors.
Yeah.
but one morning I was sitting there after breakfast. I'm just sitting there, admiring the beauty of the Swiss Alps, and out I would say approximately 30 or 40 miles. Away from the hotel was a very high mountain peak, snow-covered mountain peak in the Alps.
Uh-huh.
And I started, and for some reason, I decided to stare at that mountain peak. It was beautiful, but there was something about it that was attracting my attention.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, 3 huge birds came out from behind the mountain peak and started circling around the top of the mountain. They began to circle around the peak. But the point being is that if this was like 30 to 40 miles away, and these birds, I would estimate from where I was seeing them, that they were like maybe a quarter of an inch wide and long. If you see a bird 40 miles away, which is a quarter inch wide and a quarter inch long, that is a big bird.
Well, it's Griffith Park all over again.
Yes, exactly what it was. I saw 3 pterodactyls circling the mountain. I took a picture of it with my phone picture, and I don't know. I've never been able to really blow it up to see if I got anything. But at least you'll see the mountain, and you'll see where I was. And I don't know if you can see it or not.
I'll enlarge it. We'll see if we can see anything.
Yeah. And so, but I saw 3 pterodactyls circling around a mountain, a snow-capped mountain peak, 30 to 40 miles away. And I'm just telling you.
That's Mount Maxwell, isn't it?
Yes. Logic alone would tell you, if you're seeing a bird that is a quarter inch long, that's a big bird. That's
Well, the one over at Griffith Park going to meet its 5 friends was 747 size. So, wow.
I'm just telling you what's out there, what my eyes saw.
That's why there are so many missing people every year.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. The only thing else I would say is my website is Jordan Maxwell Show. JordanMaxwellShow.com.
Brian, say hello to Jordan. JordanMaxwellShow.com. Amazing stories. Amazing
stories. Well, thank you for allowing me to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be here next Wednesday if you got the time.
Okay.
Thanks, friend.
Thank you, Jeff.
Wow. Amazing. All right, that's our program tonight. We thank Jordan for sharing all that. Extraordinary material. JordanMaxwellShow.com is his website. And there's a contact button there, and you can drop him a note. All right, we will be back with you tomorrow night. See you then.